Actually, you know what? It wouldn't be nearly as austere.
Is that more persuasive? This really is intended to be like a campfire, and this room originally had a beautiful big fireplace, and then they put a hood over it, and then they took it all out. But this lighting of candles evokes that history, and the idea regularly is to get together and tell stories about holding around the focal point of the Hold the Core values, and I've invited a few people to just start us off with some stories that relate to our two core values of ecology and place. We have a vision, mission, and then a set of core values that guide Holden Village. And I just want to read the core values related to ecology and place. Just join the circle. We're just working out. Some people aren't, but mostly we are. And it's okay. You can sit anywhere. But we're trying to
encourage the circle.
You must not be a Lutheran.
I am, but I try to break some of those norms.
The core value of ecology says we celebrate and seek to serve creation's well-being through faithful patterns of daily living. So I imagine that core value of ecology inviting stories of people's experience here at Holden, trying to engage in patterns of faithful living in daily life, and as you live in daily life beyond here in ways that recall your experiences at Holden. I think Holden is just as powerful for me at home as it is here. And then the core value of place. We commit to be grateful stewards of the surprising gift of Holden Village and its place in the wilderness. So that's interesting, being grateful stewards both of Holden Village and its place in the wilderness. So the core value of place has layers to it, layers that emerge maybe out like rings emerge from a rock you throw in the lake, and being grateful stewards of that. So those are the two core values. And I invited a villager who has long experience, Terrell, a staff member, Brent, who's not here yet, and a teaching staff member. Did I ask you, Will? Who did I ask? I can't remember even which teaching staff member I asked, but there are a few teaching staff members here. And all of us are invited to share stories, but I wanted to seed the pot with a few people who would get the storytelling started. So maybe, Terrell, do you want to start? You've been connected to Holden a long time, so why don't you, and others can do this as well, just share a little bit about your background with the village, and then the story that gets us going thinking about these values in our life here together at Holden.
Okay. Well, it's apparent even for the first time, villager, that this is a beautiful setting, but there, of course, are other beautiful valleys in the North Cascades. And for me, what sets it apart is the people. And when you think about it, this is a really heavily used place. And so when we talk about the ecology of this place, we might say, well, what gives us the ability to have so many people use this place in such a light manner? And I believe it's because we have a pervasive shared value where we recognize, remember, and cherish and protect this as a precious gift from our Savior. I really believe that that's a feeling we all walk around with here. I've been privileged for over three decades to be part of the Science and Technology Committee, and we're advisors to the directors on those hidden things that allow so many people to use this valley and in a light manner. Those are things like the hydropower and the water and the sewer and the garbology, which is sort of my pet area. Memory fades the stories, but I'll just throw out some little memories, if you will. When I first came here in 79, the miners had left behind gold dust, and the wind would carry that dust onto our windowsills and tables and sometimes our lunches. And so one of the things we tried to do was cap the tailings in some manner, and there were little islands set out on the tailings, with little rock outlines with carefully seeded pine trees and other plants. One of the things that was very heartening to me was that there was a remediation effort going on. It didn't involve engineers and equipment. And that would be little weed seeds would blow in and birds would drop seeds. And year after year, there was a little more growth there, and it gradually covered things. And I said to myself, in 50 years absent, if you understood those buttes and terraces, you would know that those were mine tailings, at least from the appearance. And so for me, it's a very heartening feel of how there's a wonderful redemptive process going on without our intervention. Let me throw out a couple real quick other things that the science committee has tried. We were sun worshippers, so we had hot water heating panels on Agape for a while. And then we were very excited about solar heating of Koinonia, except some of us were naive and forgot that the sun had to rise over Buckskin before that would work. So we have those artifact windows and that little clean space out there, which I thought would be lovely, but obviously I've been here in the winter. So we not only recycle parts of our waste stream here, but we also recycle ideas. And one idea that is coming back in the next few months, I think, is vermiculture, that's worm composting. Werner had tried that many years ago. It's going to make another comeback. Let's see, other things. Along the lines of composting, what will also be happening in the next couple months is we've ordered two large, what they call earth tubs. They're about 8-foot diameter compost vessels, and they have a turner inside it and a blower, so it'll work more effectively than those little corrals we have up on that side of the crypt where we can't access very easily anymore. So those are some of the kinds of things from a garbologist's point of view that have happened and have allowed us to tread lightly on the land.
Thank you. By the way, I didn't say this at the beginning, but my name is Chris Sharon, and together with my wife Sonia Batalden and our friend Susan and Paul Rohde, we've been working for almost 2 years planning the teaching staff for the summer and then sharing the summer, hosting and facilitating the teaching. So one of the joys of that role is also trying to foster conversation, and the forums of various sorts are a part of that. So that's why I'm trying to host. And that's a great beginning, seeding lots of different stories. And maybe one of the teaching staff, whoever wants to, just share a story of your experience of Holden related to these values of ecology and place. Anything come to your mind?
I'll say a couple of things.
Yeah.
I was invited to come, not with the purpose of, I wasn't asked to say development, sit off the cuff, but so I was teaching this week on cities and relationships, and Chris claims that he didn't plan it this way, but it was wonderful that on 2 days explicitly, and on the other days a little bit less explicitly, but on 2 days in particular, Alan's stories, Bible studies were on the same subject as my sessions were on. On Wednesday he talked about economics, and I was talking about economics, and on Friday, this morning he talked about conflict resolution, and I was talking about conflict resolution in planning, and his Bible study was so thought-provoking for me, and then I've been told by a couple of people that when I referred to that during my session, then that made both of them richer for them. And so that was lovely to hear. And I, on the one hand, I suppose it's nice when those things just happen. On the other, we might also think about all of this. One might think about trying to be more intentional about those, getting similar subjects from different fields or things. And the other, in terms of the ecology of the place, I hiked up the Heart Lake today and came back, and I noticed on the footbridge over the creek, you know, the one, there's really only one on the way up to Heart Lake, and there's one to the left is the horse board, and on the right is the footbridge.
Yeah.
And there's that sort of tree falling over the river downstream, and there's some dead branches. And there are a whole bunch of birds. The birding term is fly catching, which is exactly what it sounds like, flying out and catching flies. And they would perch on those dead branches and then fly out and catch and fly back. And they were in perfect binocular range so far. The bridge was far enough away that they didn't mind me, but they were close enough that I could really watch them. And there were some warblers doing this, and that was not surprising. There was a thrush doing it, which was very surprising. And they were perching there, and then all of a sudden I was really enjoying this, and all of a sudden this chipmunk wanted to get from one side of the river to the other and ran across and scared up a bunch of birds. And it was just this perfect little peaceable kingdom, unless of course you were a mayfly. But, you know, here was the chipmunks and birds and little bugs and seeds, and I got to sit there for quite a while. And it wasn't normally when birders watch warblers, you get warbler. Yeah. And the bridge was perfect, and the tree was perfect, and the stream was perfect, and it was all backlit against this water. And we were just sitting there. It was the most perfect experience that I've had in so long. It was so beautiful. It was so wonderful. And I was just so grateful to be able to do that.
Cool. A couple of people have come in, so let me just recast. What our object is just to sit around the hearth and tell some Holden stories from our experience of Holden. There isn't one Holden, there's lots of Holdens, and they exist. And part of the reason we picked the theme, drawing on the image of a river, is because Holden is, in a sense, like a river, and you never step in the river the same twice. And so even my own experience of Holden is multiple because I've come at different times. And these stories we're trying to orient around two of the key core values that fit a sense of the conversation this week, ecology and place. And this story Will just told reminded me of, I'm not sure what summer it was, Sunyet, but I think it was the last time we were here the whole summer in 2008, when there was that, there were the bear cubs down in that tree. And it was, for whatever reason, I think it was Paul Hinderle's cooking. The summer was just totally overscheduled, and they had sort of miscalculated how many beds were available. And so they ended up creating a staff tent city down behind Narnia. And this was a serious morale challenge for the directors, but they had a whole bunch of staff down living in this tent city, and I think part of the reason that it worked was because this, I think one or two bear cubs, the mom had just sort of sequestered her cubs up this cottonwood tree, and they were sitting up there, I don't know, maybe 40 feet up on these branches, just sort of lounging off the branches. And
weeks. Yeah, it was a
very long time. So the staff going back and forth up to their tent city could stand there and just sort of admire these amazing bear cubs just lollygagging up in the cottonwood tree. And I think all of us have had our fill of chipmunks and ground squirrels, but it was a real treat to have that close of experience with the bear cubs. And we had to be cautious, of course, because you don't want to get in between the cubs and the mom.
But nonetheless, it was really a rare experience, really wonderful.
Can I tag on that?
Yeah, please.
One of the summers we were here in this tree that's right between Koinonia and Village Center, a tub was up in the tree. And what someone told me at that time was that that's how the mother weans the cub.
Huh.
She gets the cub up into the tree, and then they have to figure out how they're going to get back down again.
By the time they do,
they're weaned.
They're hungry. Exactly.
I'm only going by what I was told at that time. Yes, it was really fun watching.
I'll say one more thing.
Yeah.
The other great thing about talking with folks about cities here is that it is a model. It is a small model of a city,
and
it's a great place to engage people about why did you bother coming all this way? There must be something you like about this. What is that? And people will have opinions about that, which is great, and then we can discuss what can you take back about that. And I'm sure that there are a lot of feelings. This just happens to be mine, but a lot of feelings about what would you like to take back and do. Not just holding your heart, but actually do.
Yeah.
Related to ecology, I always thought it would be interesting, or I just think it would be fascinating to think. For me anyway, so maybe I generalize that, but garbology has been a really powerful piece of this village over the years that has shaped the way we do garbage at home, and I think about garbage everywhere I go. And it really comes from my time here and sorting garbage on Garbo Dock. I mean, and I just wonder for how many people, if you think about that ripple going out, has shaped and changed the way.
I was briefly chief garbologist before there was any kind of recycling. It was like burn or put in the landfill up in the tailings, right?
Yeah.
And that was it. That was the extent of what we had to do, go around and pick up the garbage and sort it into those two compartments.
Wow.
Also, I remember the tailings were where we went and played. We rolled in the dust, and up and rolled it inside. We soaked it up, played there all day long. And I remember when the whole ecology movement sort of became part of village life, but when we started out hiking, my first 2 years in 1989 didn't do any real hiking outside the village, but then hit 10 and started going hiking, and you would put on your exterior frame pack with the canvas sack and march down the trail, and then you would get to your campsite, Heart Lake or whatever, and the first thing you'd do, you'd pull out your hatchet and your nail, and put your nail in the tree, and then hang up your pack, start a fire, go get wood and start a fire, cut down green branches to put underneath you, make a nice comfortable bed.
Wow.
This stuff seems so strange. 7-8 years later, it was strange, but you know, Holden went through that whole consciousness raising with ecology just along with the rest of the country.
Wow.
Originally, it was not there at all.
So when was that? I mean, about what year?
So we first came up in 65.
Mm-hmm.
I started backpacking a lot in 67.
But the Science and Technology Committee started quite early on, didn't it?
Well, it was here by 79, which is when I arrived. And the core group was maybe a half dozen college professors. And there was a young forester who was on the board. A smart aleck engineer. And it's evolved. We have, in the last, I don't know, decade or so, it's sort of, when we would have summer meetings, it was up at the Portal Museum, and it was on a drop-in basis, and people came and stayed. And we have a delightful mix of people who are biologists and geologists and engineers and scientists and people that are interested in invasive species, and it's, I guess one of the things that all seems like a miracle to me is just when you think things have really gone bad, somebody shows up who knows what the answer is.
Yeah.
There were years, you may remember, when the septic system was failing, and I've worked about that, and you know, one of the theories as we scratch our heads was, that the ground squirrels had invaded and plugged the pipes. We don't, and then Bob Wobina showed up and said, well, here, I know how to fix that. And we got a new drain field. And so people seem to show up just like with the hydro when the runners, turbine part wore out. They found somebody in Bellingham who could make new runners. And those, that's part of the miracle, is somebody shows up. Who knows? How am I?
The thing that strikes me about the two, putting those two place in ecology, like you said, the sort of, that both those values are there. You could imagine on a spectrum, like, if this place swung so much in the direction of, we're in the wilderness, we're roughing it, it would be impossible for people of a certain age or for young children or for people with any kind of health issues to come. But if it swung so much in the direction of, well, it's all about the community and it's all about us being together here, then, you know, you could really lose sight of the gift of the whole system of ecology around it. And to find that sweet spot in the middle is really kind of what is rich about this place, is that it does try to find that space in between.
If people don't know, there was, in winter 2011, there was a really excellent feature article about Holden Village in Skiing magazine. And if we became the place that the magazine was reporting on,
yeah,
a destination backcountry ski place, yeah, I think that would be really quite different. That would be a different vision of this place. But they were pretty high on it.
It's awesome.
Oh, this is... my first time here, I'd heard a lot about Holden Village for 15 or 20 years from students and colleagues, but I decided I didn't really want to do any research on it. I just wanted to show up, you know, and take it all in. And I brought like a couple of books that I thought I was going to read. I brought watercolors. I was going to just be doing drawings. And it's like drinking from a fire hose. Just when you think, okay, now I'm just going to just kind of chill. Something comes up or you need somebody. And it's fantastic, but I'm exhausted.
Amen.
Yeah, really, it's all about, I'm an ecologist. I spent a lot of time in the mountains, so that's been nice, but really the most amazing thing for me is just the relationships, you know, and the interactions that just happen, just, you know, you just don't expect it. And I'll give you one example. Mike Mullen is my colleague at Augustana College, and we just talked in passing over the years about a course we might teach, but never got very far. Well, the other day we just, on the spur of the moment, decided to go for a hike up Martin's Ridge, and we didn't get to the top, but we kind of got stranded on this cliff. We were really tired, and we were just kind of sitting there, and over the next hour, we developed a course.
We might never get back, but if we do.
Well, I don't think we would have ever found the time, there to have an hour.
Gotta be stranded on a cliff.
That's great.
Part of this place, at least that's my
sense. That's great.
It's also a vulnerable place, apart. We were here for the summer of 2004, coordinating the teaching staff, and that was the summer that we were evacuated for 10 days because of forest fires. The danger was that the forest fire was coming up toward, it's also been evacuated once since, but that year it did not get up to the road between here and Lucerne, but there was an agreement that if it got to a certain ridge just south, that we would evacuate the village. But there was a lot of preparation for that. We went through an evacuation drill in the week or two prior to that, and it was all organized. We knew which which buses we were to be on, you know, which we were divided into groups. And we found out on a Saturday evening that we were going to be evacuating by Monday and Tuesday. And the Forest Service sent in the firefighters before we left. The staff didn't all go out. Some went out on Monday with some of the people, and some went out on Tuesday. And I think it was 13. They were called left behind at that time. but it was very interesting to see how the Forest Service put hoses on the roofs of the chalets. We cleared up everything off of every porch so there would be nothing that would be on a porch that could get. We took down curtains from all the windows in the lodges. You know, a lot of precautions. And we were out of the village for, staff was called back after 10 days, and then guests could begin coming back. It was just shut down for 2 weeks. But needing to be very careful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what's here? And then, is it 3 years ago that the evacuated again?
Seven.
In 07. Okay. And that time you can see it actually got up to the road, because you can see that as you come in on the bus. The reason it had to be evacuated was so that the, because that's the only exit out of
I remember having to sleep on Martin's Ridge getting lost, so probably glad you didn't have that much time.
I think I've talked to more people who've been lost on Martin Ridge than have had a successful life.
I went back the next summer.
Did you?
Right.
Yeah.
But me and my friend Julian, who thought that was a great idea, the hike I hadn't done, and him never having hiked to blaze up Martin's Ridge.
I can't believe there's still not a trail up there. In the early days, you weren't allowed to go up there because they still feared the rocks coming down, the avalanches. So anybody wanted to go hike up there had to sneak up there, right? It was definitely not allowed. But then suddenly one year you could go up there, but there's still no trail. I wonder why nobody.
Well, there's about 50 trails.
Yeah.
And there's like cairns everywhere, you know? So you follow the cairn and, oh, this must be it, and then you end up out on some slips.
There are kind of mythic hikes up here. I went once with Rick Dunning, who spent a lot of summers up here, up to Dole Lakes. And I'd often heard about Dole Lakes as this magic fishing place where all you had to do was throw anything in the lake and the fish would bite it. And we were there 2 hours and Rick caught 100 trout.
Oh my goodness.
I've never been at a place like that fishing, but it was the hardest hike I've ever been on in my life. It's just, there once was a trail, but it's certainly not been maintained at all.
Yeah, there was a long-term staff member named Vernon who maintained it as his personal fiefdom.
That's right.
All his stuff up there, he would take people along only if you would help haul stuff up, cached it in the big rocks, and then hid his trail to get up there. But in those days, you couldn't catch 100 fish. There were just a few ginormous fish that you could see going around. You could fish all day, and you might get one. If you got one, Ernie was really jealous.
Wow.
But this was his personal lake.
Yeah.
And he disguised the trail.
Yeah. I think Rick first went up with Ernie, and that's how he found out where it was. I mean, it's on all the maps, but it's really hard to get to.
And it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's just gorgeous. It's the prettiest.
It's you go down two creeks past Copper Creek, and then up.
He's coming out of the creek.
Yeah. Other people.
Well, I think you talk about the ecology. I think our family first, maybe 27 years ago, mid-80s. And I think the thing is that we took down lake with us was very simple things that we could change in our own lives. And And in a sense, it was a sense of bringing the place with us. You know, I still have the cloth napkins I bought when I went down 25 years ago. You know, and I think of the number of paper napkins I've saved. And my sister-in-law will probably never get it, because every time she comes to my house, she says, "What do you mean you don't have paper napkins?" Well, I've got like 4 dozen now, so it's all, you know, we lack for a napkin. But she just can't get over the fact that we don't have paper napkins in our house. But it's that sense of little things like that. My kids were mad at me for years because we didn't go to McDonald's because they had little styrofoam clamshells for their burgers, and I wasn't going to buy into that.
Yay.
So, you know, but it's, I think those little things that, you know, like I think so we talked about ripples, you know, that I think, you know, if everybody that went down that mountain changed one thing in their lives, I mean, this world's going to get turned upside down eventually, or right side up. So.
I think that Holden is a, it has a drawing place. To be drawn to this place. We have visited a lot of camps, Bible camps, elsewhere in this country, but there's something about a 3-hour boat ride that draws people to this place, and that's what continued to draw us back. We were here the first time, September 1st to the 17th in 1963. And then, and it took us 21 years to get back here because we were out in parishes in the Midwest, and I was director of Lutheran's Outdoors in South Dakota, so we had our own camps to go to in the summertime. But when we came back in 84, then from then on, the place really drew us. Been back, I suppose, 20 some time since. It does have a drawing place, a drawing presence.
Can I bounce off of that? Absolutely. I'm here for the first time. My wife and I both. And I value and believe and embrace everything you just said about the sense of place here. Most everybody's been talking about the place, but Holden is more than a place. Holden's a network. It's Holden is a concept. It's I've never been here before, but I feel right at home. I know what to expect. 10, 12 years ago, my congregation in Kentucky started using Marty Haugen's Holden Evening Prayer. I've taken it with me to Indiana. Several congregations are using it, and it's just beautiful. 20 years ago, my wife and I were ELCA missionaries overseas, which meant that every couple of years we were invited to and involved in global mission events. And at the global mission events, the music comes from Holden. Prayer around the cross comes from Holden. We were introduced to this 20 years ago. Okay, now we'll get serious. 40 years ago, as a young sprout, I can't imagine how that was so long ago. I lived in Washington, D.C., and I was part of a funny little group in the middle of town called the Community of Christ. We met in the basement, little tiny groups, met in homes, we shared meals, had cute Eucharist every week. And it transformed my life. I'm different today. I wouldn't be a pastor today if it weren't, at least in part, from the experience I had there. There was more, but that was a major part of it. And I expected a little bit of a reunion here with my Community of Christ days 40 years ago, because I knew Nyla and Larry were coming. I saw that on the program way back last week. Oh, the Rasmussens will be here. They remember. In fact, I house sat for them. And John and Mary Schramm, who were the directors here. He was our pastor. Mm-hmm. And they were dear friends, and they helped kick me in the rear and made me think about the cemetery. You know. Mm-hmm. You know, they used to be there, and then only a month ago I learned they live near here now, in retirement. Karen and I were able to see them.
Oh, nice.
Mm. We had dinner with them on Saturday night. It's the first time in 40 years.
Wow.
Oh, that cool? Oh, it was great. What a wonderful time. And I thought, oh, well, that's great. That's my reunion. I got assigned a room. We walked into our room number over in dorm 4, and there was Rudy Wendelin laying on the desk. The cover of the Holden history book has a watercolor on it,
yep.
Mm-hmm.
By Rudy Wendelin, who was here. Rudy and Carol were here twice. Rudy and Carol were in our little mission group.
Oh.
The Smokey Bear prints out here in the
yep.
hall, mm-hmm. Rudy left them. Mm-hmm. Remember Rudy and Carol?
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
They were bigger, and I want to say Rudy and Carol were a bigger influence on my life than John and Mary.
Mm-hmm.
They're in my heart.
When Rudy was here one time, one of those times.
Twice.
Yeah, one of those times the Forest Service showed up and called him up front in the dining hall at a meal and honored him.
Oh.
This was the illustrator of Smokey the Bear.
Rudy invented Smokey the Bear.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
He worked for the Forest Service. He was not here because of the Forest Service. He was here because
yeah.
of the church.
I know, but the Forest Service found
yeah,
out.
Yeah, they found out
he was here. On the street without everybody knowing who he was and what he had done for this country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Holden is much better than Holden.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always thought it a bit ironic that we come up to this, you know, looks a bit like a pristine place and a gorgeous setting, and then we're also at the largest toxic site in the state of Washington, you know. But, and the two right smack up against.
That's right.
And you've got a group of people that care deeply about the ecology of this place, about maintaining it, and you learn all these things. You got to pack everything, you got to pack about. You get into some of these habits that you take home with you. And still, you've got these two realities kind of side by side. But I think, in a way, that's a kind of foretaste of what we're going to be doing in a lot of our communities. We're going to have to be understanding them as very vulnerable, precious places that we have to care for with every habit that we form and can form, so that they may be sustained and may be regenerated, at the same time that we're going to have to be paying lots of money and doing lots of things to clean up messes right on our own doorstep. So I think Holden is, in that sense, anticipating what a whole lot of communities will need to be doing. And some of them are much grander scale, like cities that are a whole lot larger than this.
Well said.
I like that from generation to generation that's been mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we enjoyed, we by accident got started. We brought our oldest grandchild here when we knew we were going to be here in 91. And she happened to be 7 years old. And so we brought her along for the week. And she had three younger brothers, of course, who were standing in line then. Each of them turned 7. Well, so we had brought... 5, 9,